Blog Talk Radio.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Drake.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Ford.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Let's do this.
Yes, sir.
Ric Flair, I got a move for every move you make. Woo! Let's do this, guys. We're having an amazing May, and we got to kick this off. It's been a good, interesting couple of days, and yeah, let's check in with the fellows, America. We're excited. JQ, how you feeling, CD, my guy?
Oh, I am ecstatic. I'm good, bro. Chilling out. Oh, you were that game last night.
Heck of a game, you know, but I did.
I paid for a little bit of that. I took him that when I got home from work. But yeah, I definitely stayed up to watch it.
Good stuff. Rob Ford, T-Bob, how you feeling this evening, sir?
Hey, man, doing great, man. Ready to get this party started. Another great opportunity for us to have a great show on tonight. Let's make it do what it do, baby.
There it is. Appreciate you, and again, no asparagus talk. Hey, Gary, how you feeling this evening, sir?
I'm doing good. No asparagus talk. I'm doing good.
I had some with lunch today, but not dinner.
Oh, God.
I cut back a little.
Yes. If you are out there, any asparagus farmers, just kind of keep the sponsorship going. We're going to keep this going, too. But, man, again, we are ready to get this party started. We got a jam-packed show. We want to fit everything in because we are going to wrap this up about 12. I'm sure everyone is a little, trying to get ready for work and all that fun stuff, too, and celebrating after, you know, an amazing night, too. So let's throw out the numbers as we always like to do. Oh, what's up? What? What's going on? What?
Work.
Well, okay.
No, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I'm just saying.
He's rumbling in there.
I was trying to be nice.
Don't worry. Hey,
not everyone's like you're. Yeah, go ahead.
30 years, you'll be right there. Don't worry about it. It'll go by fast.
You're still working. You know you got those honey. That. You got the honey to do list.
Shit, Rob. If you only knew. I'm thinking about going and getting a job.
You think my buddy, so you don't have to do anything. I got to get a job so I don't have to do stuff around the house.
I'm going to thank Delta for my job back.
Hilarious.
Oh, my goodness gracious. We were going to aspire to be Gary, but maybe now not so much. Well, Gary, you still got a lot.
I even got my Delta jersey on.
Wow.
Oh, man, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
They gave those out to all the fit members. No, Velvet members.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Does it have a number on that, Gary, or no? Is this a plain
name? It does.
Does it have a number? Whoa.
94.
Okay. Why 94?
Is there a reason for 94?
That was DeMarcus Ware's number, you know.
Okay.
What was Too Tall Jones number back in the day?
72.
Okay.
And the other guy I liked back on that line was the Manster, Randy White. He was 54.
Randy White, defensive tackle, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's get this going, and we're not going to make it.
I know. I was just I was trying to let you have a little moment there, Gary, so all good. Hey, real quick, just put the numbers for those who want to call in. for Nod and everyone else that wants to reach out to you boys, 424-243-9519 is the number. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, CHMAN Sports, and last but not least, go.com/TalkingSports12Men or 12-Man Sports as well. So let's get this party started here. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about, you know, Dan Campbell. And this is crazy how we're going to start out with some Lions talk here. I know it's going to make Gary excited here, but Dan Campbell views Hendon Hooker's age as a positive. Now, is this some like a reverse Ooh. Jedi trick, or you think this is actually, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Are you asking me? I don't think it's a positive or a negative at this stage. You know, this is, you know, this is really a non-topic for me because it's just, he's, what, 25, right?
25.
So what's the difference at this stage? Let's see a few years down the road how it's going to affect him. I don't think a 25-year-old is that much more mature than a 23-year-old or a 22-year-old. I think when you're in your 20s and all of a sudden you're getting these big bucks, we'll see how these play out. It may be that he's very mature for his age or whatever, but most people that are 23 to 25 are all in that same group. We got a lot to learn. So that's where I stand.
Chris Winkie called and said he begs to differ. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, how old was Chris Winkie? He was like 28, right, when he came in the league as a rookie?
I didn't look that up. Like, I was kind of joking. Yeah. 27 or 28,
yeah. Yep, he was somewhere in that ballpark. Well, the Lions have pretty much all but said he's going to have a redshirt year this first year. So we're not going to expect to see him this year with a combination of, even though he's ahead of schedule with his injury, they're pretty much all but said that, hey, you know, this is going to be a redshirt year. An opportunity for him to rehab, an opportunity for him to continue to learn their offense and kind of get ready, right? Yeah, I think basically what Dan Campbell is saying, hey, you know, here's a guy coming with a certain maturity level. And I think with certain guys, 25 versus 21 is a huge difference. I mean, you know, he's been through some things, right? So he's a guy that's going to come in there and be disciplined. He's going to come in there and be focused. I mean, he's had to move around different schools and things of that nature. So, I mean, he's a guy that's already been through a few things in life. So he's going to come with that want. You know, Les Miles was saying, you got to have the want. So he's going to come in there with the want. And you know, so I think that's kind of where Dan Campbell is going with that, where I think his age is going to be, you know, it's going to be a certain maturity level. He's going to come in there with a certain focus. And you know, a guy that's going to come in there that's ready to play after the rehab. So definitely a guy that's going to come in there and take this whole situation very seriously, especially with everything he's going through in his college career.
I think it would have been if he hadn't got hurt. And I say that because he's already at that age. And I think there's a slight difference between 23 and 25, not a lot. But I still think at some point you also have the ability to receive instruction and take it and criticism. Maybe a little better at 25, 23, especially if you're already a serious-minded kind of young guy. But now it's going against him because you're 25 and you have to give up one of those years. When you're 22 and you get hurt and you give up a year, you think guys play today 35, 40 years old, you feel like you got a lot more time. But once you're 25 and you're not going to probably play until you're 26, you can't get out there, OTAs and all that, and how much of it can you get there and get the chemistry with the guys. That hurts the longevity of your career. So, I mean, I think in terms of receiving instruction and all that good stuff, I would have said, yeah, but I hate that kid at 25 is off the year now because he was already, you know, on the back end of the young guys coming in being 25 and everybody else is 22, 21, 22, 23. So I get where he was going with it, but I think it's off a little bit fluster now because he has to give up his first year.
Yeah, and just for some interesting stats, because I was looking that up, and, you know, actually, if you look at trivia, Chris Winkie is the oldest player drafted at 28 years, 264 days old. The oldest quarterback drafted in the first round, he actually played, I think he played for your Cowboys, Gary. I don't remember this name. He was drafted by the Browns. Brandon Whedon was actually right there after. He was 28 years, 195 days. So he was actually the oldest quarterback taken in the first round, too. So, you know, we were talking about some interesting things with that.
And did
the
pool offense?
I'm going to play.
No.
Not at all. That's just crazy how we thought about this, too. That was a joke, and I was like, oh, man, I didn't realize he was the oldest player ever drafted. So, you know, definitely get some good good stuff. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, 25, you would think there's some level of maturity, if you will. But like you said, just it depends on the player and the person at that juncture, too. As long as you're not knocking on doors, you know, like Stetson Bennett, I guess everything is good. Let's talk about
another
thing with the Giants. Plan for Saquon if he actually holds out. So what have you heard about this, Rob, and do the Giants? I know this is something that and I'm sure Gary doesn't care about, but what happens if Saquon holds out, Rob?
Well, I mean, they got Matt Breida as number two on the depth chart right now. I mean, he's had his moments, and third on the depth chart is Eric Gray, running back from Oklahoma, who they just drafted in the draft. So in other words, they better get Saquon Barkley and Cam.
I didn't realize he was that bad. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Matt Breida is number two on the depth chart. Eric Gray is number three on the depth chart. And, you know, and they have high hopes for Eric Gray. I mean, he's a guy, you've seen some big playability from him at Oklahoma. So they do have high hopes for him. But, I mean, Saquon Barkley had an incredible year last year, probably the best in the league. I mean, he was MVP of that offense, catching the ball out of the backfield, the way he was running the football.
Yeah.
So they need him. And ultimately, I think he'll be with the Giants. I don't think he's going to be holding out missing any games. Worst-case scenario, he signs the one-year franchise tender. Obviously, the best case for both parties would be a long-term extension. But I'd say at worst, he's definitely on that roster for a week one, even if it's just for a one-year franchise tender.
And that's what I was going to say, too. I was going to read off the names of the running backs and then just say, no, they need him. They need him in a big way. He's the heart and soul of that offense. Without him, no threat of that run and the play action, they're going to tee off on that quarterback, and it's going to be beautiful. So I'm hoping he does hold out.
Yeah, he's one of the few workhorses in the league. I mean, you look at it now, a lot of teams using a 1-2-3 punch at running back. So he's one of the few running backs in the league right now. It's like a workhorse. I mean, there's probably only a handful of those guys now. To where 20 years ago, every team had a workhorse. But now, you know, it's running back by committee in the NFL for most teams.
Yeah.
With a few teams with a workhorse back.
Hell, tripping. No, you can't give him that money because he only took 40. You could stay healthy last year. If he signs his franchise contract, I'm not going to give him a long-term deal because that dude can't stay healthy for one, for two. You are guys like Orlando Gary come out of nowhere from Denver rushing for 1,200 yards. You can go get a running back. I think Eric Gray can be serviceable. You can go to somebody's practice squad or get out there, give them a dress of phrases and play that market. You can go get a running back. Some dudes just don't have a room for it, all the backs they have, and they try to stash one on the practice squad or cut them in camp, and then you go get one. So if it comes to that, I will let Eric Gray learn offense for one. He will be the starter. I'm not starting Matt fucking Breida. Okay, we know what he can do. He's always supposed to be a change of pace back. I'm going to let the young fella run and run them young legs into the ground, and then I'm going to get you somebody on somebody's practice squad. And then we're going to keep pushing. You look up James Robinson. Like, you get running backs that you didn't hear of, that you had no idea were going to come into the year and be good at this point of the season and be a good back. So it's one of those few positions that you can go get one from somewhere and say, hey, man, run through the five hole. Like, you don't say, like, we're running the sweep. We're running this, you know, tackle to the left-hand side. Like, you can get them in there and get them spun up. It's not like trying to go get your left tackle or your quarterback. You know what I mean? Or a wide receiver that needs to run all the – that has to learn how to run all the trees from all the positions to fall out in the outside. So I would say the Giants are going to say, Barry, you haven't been able to stay healthy. We got to meet a number that works for all of us. If not, people are not getting paid for these days, so be it.
Well, this is what I would say about that is you're right. You're right about that. But I think the Giants are in a tough position. I think they believe they're in a tough position. I would do the same thing. I would try and do my best to get him to sign that franchise tag, see if he can stay healthy. If he stays healthy, maybe they can be a playoff team again. If he doesn't stay healthy, then it can be a short-term deal. Either way, they can get him out of there next year maybe, either draft a guy or do exactly what you said, pick up one of these hungry guys off of the practice squad and go from there. But I'd try and get him to – I wouldn't sign him to a long-term deal, but I think the Giants will.
Well, what should you say on a long-term deal? Like, is it 3 years for $40 million, you give me $15 million guaranteed up front, and then you spread the cap over those 3 years or avoid it for 4 years? Like, long-term is 3 years and 6 years. I wouldn't give him, like, no 5 or 6 year deal. But if I give him 3 years and give him a little bit of that money up front, right, for the past year, but the cap hit in years two and three.
He's going to demand a hell of a lot more than that.
Well, then I'm going to let somebody else give him that shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, the elite running backs right now are only getting, you know, to you all's point, 3 to 4 years at about $40 million, maybe $50 million. And obviously all of that's not guaranteed.
Right.
So, you know, you're looking at that kind of a deal. If you look at most of the free agent running backs that signed this offseason, most of them only got $18 to $20 million deals. Obviously, there was none the caliber of Saquon Barkley on a, you know, a free agent market like that. But, you know, you look at it, a lot of these guys got 3 years, $10 million, 3 years, $12 million, 4 years, $15 million, or 3 years, $15 million, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So that's where a lot of these running backs are getting. I mean, it's definitely a position that we've talked about on the show. It's definitely a position that's been devalued around the league. So, you know, I think for Saquon, he could probably get somewhere in that $40 to $50 million range.
Yeah, and just to put a bow on that, it's you know, and it's almost unfair, you know, JQ, that you mentioned Orlando Scary, because the Denver team, they have a different kind of running style, that different offense. You know, any running back, you can get like 1,000 yards. You know,
that's
be patient with that too. But you know, so, but even with though, like you talk about, and Gary mentioned it too, it's a situation where, you know, kind of like the Giants, you kind of gamble, you kind of lost because you don't really have a backup for Saquon. You can kind of say, hey, this is what I've done. And, you know, the smartest thing is, like you said, to the franchise tag and try to find somebody else and try to see if there is a running back on a practice squad and then try to get that situation squared away too. But, you know, right now, like I said, don't do a holdout like Emmitt Smith, you know, so far. You know, do what you got to do, man. Get paid, man. See what happens to you. So at least you got 1 year. Let's talk about a couple things here. This is for you, Gary. Those contract positions.
The fans are going to be upset if they don't bring them back.
There it is.
They'll be all right.
Here, I know my one of my good friends is a Giants fan too. So he's all about that, you know. So anyway, let's talk about the contract extensions for CeeDee Lamb and Trayvon Diggs. What does that look like for the Cowboys, Gary? What do those contract extensions look like?
Well, I don't really know what they look like. I will say CeeDee Lamb is he'll be owed $17.9 million for this next season, and Diggs will be owed $4.8 million. I think CeeDee Lamb, if you look at the upper echelon of the league and what, and I think he's a top 10 receiver in the league. Are you, you're counting them down? What's that?
Go ahead. I was trying to figure out if that was accurate.
Okay. I think that he'll be that'll be in the ballpark of a $25 million a year deal type of a thing for that type of a position. It's less for the cornerback position. It's the top cornerbacks, I think, in the league. You're looking at an average of around 18 to 20 million a year. If they get somewhere in those ballpark, they'll be able to stay. What will probably happen is they'll both probably get deals, and then they'll work out some sort of a deal to kind of, you know, magically work that money around the system so it doesn't affect the Cowboys too much, but they'll both get signed to long-term deals.
You know where they're going to have to go. They're going to have to go to Dak and say, hey, bro, hey, because the elephant in the room is those two guys are really good for you, but there's another dude coming up right behind them that's got to get extended too. His name is Michael Parsons. So when you try to make these two deals, you got to keep that deal right behind you, your mind. Like, we can't get crazy with these two deals because we still got to pay Micah. Micah might hold out. They try to franchise Micah. He might just give him TV every day and talk shit about the Cowboys until he gives him his money because he just comes across to me that way when he's out there in the media world. So I don't know what that
looks like. And if I had to pick between those three players?
You're picking Micah.
I'm picking Micah.
100%. You damn sure better say that. So I don't know. This is tough. I mean, you hit them guys all around the same time in the draft. It's great when they're on their rookie deals, but I'm having the same problem, too, where they all come up at the same time. You just gave back that money. You can only get so much money by cutting deep. They're going to have to go talk to Dak and say, hey, man, Mr. Interception, man, we need a little bit of that money back, or, you know, we could be looking for your replacement. We'll keep those.
We're going to restructure some contracts.
Yeah, that's where they have to start, I think.
You better.
That's exactly
what they'll do, is they'll restructure enough deals to hopefully, you know, and what's horrible about how we all deal with our own scenarios with our own teams is there's always someone that is that odd man out that did well for us, that we liked, that we wanted to keep. Amari Cooper, I wanted to keep. We didn't get what we wanted for him, but he was the odd man out at the time. You know, I don't know how this is going to go with this scenario, but this is what they're going for, and this is about what they'll demand per year. So something's going to have to give. There's going to be a lot of restructuring, a lot of deals to keep him.
Probably Gilmore, too. But you traded for him, so you get that little leverage on you because you're going to look and say, hey, man, I'm not restructuring. You traded for me. I'll walk after this. Now you don't really come out looking that great because you dealt for me. So, I would start with him and Dak probably. But it's interesting that they made that deal and bring Gilmore's deal onto the books. So maybe they already have some things they're working on that we don't know about, right, that they're close and they just haven't been able to publish it yet. Because if you have those kind of worries with those three coming, then you make that deal to go get Gilmore and bring Gilmore, right? But Gilmore is interested for go another cornerback spot, right?
Yeah,
you trade for Brandon Cooks, too, even though he's up in age, though. He's in his 30s now, so you don't expect anything long-term or high value from him just yet. It would be some tough decisions. There is a creative way with the salary cap that you can squeeze them all in if you so choose. But if I had to take a guess, you know, I would say, just like you all mentioned, Michael Parsons will be number one. I think Trayvon Diggs would be number two.
You think they would choose Diggs over CeeDee Lamb? I do not. I think CeeDee Lamb is number two. He's closer to Michael Parsons than you think he is. They love CeeDee Lamb.
I would do Trayvon Diggs just because the value of the cornerback position. And obviously it comes down to see who's playing at a high level. But when you look at the cornerback position, it's a position that's valued more than the wide receiver position. You have to have elite corners on your team. You know, I always say the quarterback, your left tackle, your defensive ends, and your corners are still your most important positions on the football field. So
yeah,
as long as Trayvon is still playing at a high level, it's going to be hard to get rid of him.
This is why I say that, though. But if you got Gilmore and you say you lose him, you still feel like you got Gilmore. If you lose CeeDee Lamb, that wide receiver court, what do you have if you're Dallas? Do you feel comfortable with Brandon Cooks being your number one? You've already lost Dalton Schultz. Like, CeeDee looks around that wide receiver room, like, you can fuck around and find out if you want to. You better keep CeeDee Lamb in that wide receiver room.
I mean, ultimately, I think if all of this happened today, ultimately, they would want to keep all three. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but if it came down to two, then I think that's what, you know, I think the top two values right now would be Parsons and Diggs. But I think ultimately, I think Jerry Jones and that organization will find a way to keep all three if they could. I think they will find a way to keep all three. You know, Lamb has his, sometimes he gets the dropsies too. And, you know, he's
I'm looking around that room, and that's a steep drop-off from 1 to 2 from CD to Brandon Cook.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But you go out there, and find you, especially with this draft coming up next year, it's loaded at the wide receiver. I mean,
there you go.
One of the best wide receiver position classes. Probably one of the best wide receiver classes we're going to see in a long time. And two of those guys coming from Ohio State. And then joining Johnny Wilson from Florida State. Yeah, I mean, this class coming up is loaded at the wide receiver position.
Mm-hmm. That's right, guys.
Joining for the call, by the way.
All right, go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's joining us? Okay, I don't know who that is. All right, cool. All right, let's keep this moving here. That was a beautiful segue, Rob, into offensive players. And so let's talk about the 2024 top 10 NFL draft offensive prospects. And I'm sure there may be a quarterback in there as well as some wide receivers. So I'm curious about what you have listed for that, Rob.
He did that on purpose because he knew he was going to say you're going to have to get rid of CeeDee Lamb. He ain't slick. That's why he put that box right behind the other way.
Right now, the way these capologists are working, if Dallas really wants to keep all three, they can find a way to keep all three. I mean, in total honesty. I just said if it came down to they only wanted to, then I would say.
I'm just messing with you back. Go to the other topic of the show.
But no, that,
I love that, it. I'm loving this.
That just so happened to happen that way. That wasn't planned. That wasn't a planned segue.
Wasn't planned.
What happened was, I put the two topics right next to each other.
I mean,
that's a hard week.
It turned out to be a good segue, but it wasn't planned. But anyway, we'll move on. Caleb Williams, we all know, number one prospect at the quarterback position. So he's definitely number one. Marvin Harrison Jr. might be one of the best wide receiver prospects that we've seen in a long time. And so he will be number two. Number three, he goes by Olu Fashanu, offensive tackle from Penn State at the number three spot. Drake May, quarterback from North Carolina at the number four spot. Number five, Joe Alt, offensive tackle from Notre Dame. I know we talked about him last week. He was extremely impressive at that game we went to. We saw him against Clemson. And Clemson had quite a few of those defensive linemen get drafted in his draft this year. Going back to Olu Fashanu from Penn State, he would have been a top offensive tackle if he was the player for this draft. I mean, that's how good of a prospect he's expected to be. Brock Bowers, tight end, Georgia, another one. He would have been a top tight end in this year's draft as well. So you're looking at next year's draft. Next year's draft is loaded compared to the 2023 draft. Quinn Ewers, quarterback from Texas. He's got got him at number seven. He's even got Arch Manning thinking about going to the transfer portal already. It's crazy. Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see if that happens. J.C. Latham, offensive lineman from Alabama, number eight. Emeka Ubeka, wide receiver from Ohio State, number nine. And Johnny Wilson, wide receiver from Florida State, number 10.
Man, listen, I've seen the queue of Queen Ohio
Harris State
and Ohio
State.
State.
You now, man.
Yeah, it is. I worry about Arch Manning if Queen Ewers is pushing him like that to make sure make a big chance. But like I saw him in Ohio State, he wasn't great. He wasn't that great last year for Texas, to be 100%. So Arch was supposed to have gone to a situation where he'd go in and take that job. So if he feels like that, that means the Arch Manning is just not great. But yeah, I can't really argue with that with those top 10. Yeah, you know, Caleb was number one with a bullet. I'm really interested to see how Marvin Harrison Jr. goes, only because I mean I know I'm biased, but you don't really get a wide receiver and running back nowadays, so they go that high to draft. They fall into the teams just because of the, hey, I need a tackle or a defensive end or I need a quarterback, right? So you get into those top four that Rob talked about. So I'm just interested to see if everybody gushes over him. It's all well to gush over him, and so it's time to run up there with that pick and make him what number draft pick, you know, in 2024. So I'm interested to see that, especially with Bijan going eight this year.
then we start to see more of a King Zion. Hey, when I see a guy, I'm like, he's special, and everybody else thinks he's special, I'm not going to sit there and hope and wait and see if I can come back up to get him later. I'm going to go ahead and take him if I feel like he's the value at that board. So I'm really interested to see how that plays out. But I think Kevin's going to have to walk in and just piss on somebody's desk, you know, and not to go number one. Because I just can't see that happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, just one interesting thing is that, you know, when it comes to, you know, Harrison, like, let's say, like, if you have a team that really wants to, like, trade up, you know, like, you're like, this is my wide receiver, right? They down one piece away. You're going to do something situation like that. He should go 1-2. I mean, even, like I said, if something terrible happens to Caleb Williams, you know, he's the number one pick. But like you said, it depends on who's in that situation where I'm going to trade up to get my guy. That's the only reason why I could see something like that happening, JQ. Like, there's a guy like, hey, I want to make sure I'm getting him number one. You know, the only last time we had a number two receiver going that hot, you know, we can go back to Charles Rogers and stuff like that, too. But obviously we had Calvin Johnson number two to Detroit. Situation. Yeah, but you remember, like, you know, that was the one time where you had a wide receiver that was that dominant, if you will. So that's the only reason why I think a situation. But Harrison, like you said, Rob, that dude is number one, you know, with the bullet, you know. And an interesting note, too, I don't want to cut you off, Robert, you can get your thoughts in there. We talked about Bijan, and we've been doing some interesting – we found out that he's actually running routes. There's a guy named Goldfield.
Yeah.
He actually is working with Jamar Chase, and he's learning to run routes with Jamar Chase. And we're like, oh, my God, this dude is literally becoming a weapon. So this is a great situation where maybe he's changing the dynamic of, you know, being a running back, but also he's having this – he's becoming a weapon, right? The Deebo Samuels and, you know, kind
Christian
of
McCaffrey. Patterson,
you know, kind of a younger version of that. Yeah,
oh,
it's interesting how they're trying to change this up, too. So there you go, Rob.
Let me get on the phone with Jamar Chase, man. Jamar Chase is a New Orleanian, man. He ain't supposed to be helping no Falcons. Pick up the phone.
He's
helping
a Texas man. Nah, it's all good.
He has to work it out with Michael Parsons, too.
Huh?
Did you not see him? It was him, Michael Parsons. I forget who the third person was. Working out together, I think they were doing shuttle drills, and Mike was hanging with him with his big ass. So they're working out together. There's a video out there. If you go look it up.
Goldfield is his name. Yep. Goldfield is the guy. He's like this guru. I think there was another. I can look it up really quickly, but that was just like, oh my God, you know. So we heard about this, and we're like, man, this is that he's already putting in work to learn to run routes and whatnot. Man, okay. So
let me get on the phone. Let me get a hold of Jamar Chase and his family.
Get a call with Jamar Chase.
Don't be a hater, man. Oh, no. Don't be a hater, man.
Damn. Oh, damn. Ooh, hey.
Do you have anything else to add to that, Gary, or no?
You know, I liked it back in the day when teams didn't do that bullshit. You practiced with your own players. You stuck with your own team. You didn't give up any tendencies for some other team or any advice. You let them either they're going to be great or they're going to fall on their own. I don't like it at all. I think it's bullshit. I'm calling the Cowboys up right now. I'm telling Parsons to get his ass back to the SAR where he belongs.
Hey, man. Michael Parsons sitting courtside at the Philadelphia 76ers game on Sunday in Philly.
I know.
Don't get worried. He might want to go to the
training
Eagles.
Session you had Odell Beckham, Jalen Waddle, and Deebo Samuels, who actually worked with Bullfeet as well, too, man. So just something to think about as far as this is going down, man. So, what?
So that check he getting out of you, all that money coming to work out with him? Man, he getting paid. I need to go. You know, work on his books or mow his lawn or something. God,
I'm away from my
nice
hey, Rob,
is all
so
I'm saying.
It's all about check, man. You know, work on your feet, JQ. You're right there, man. You know, so it's all good. You need to call you platinum feet, man. How about that, man?
I'm doing the wrong thing.
Working too late, man. Rob, let's talk about the 2024 top five NFL defensive prospects here. So we went down here. So there you go.
All right, number one, the best name in the draft, Kool-Aid McKinstry, cornerback, Alabama. Man, come on, man. How you name the dude Kool-Aid?
Oh, my God. Well, number I got two. A yellow orange or something like that at one point, too, back in the day. Was a guy named Jello? There was a guy named Jello Orange at one point. I think he played for
Clemson. No, man, no. The code is Ever Crawford.
That's right. The coldest ever. Nothing's going to be him. Yeah, nothing's
going to
be
that. The
coldest ever. Oh, my God.
Go ahead,
Rob. He's
going to
mess them up.
Number two. The
coldest ever.
Jared Verse, big athletic defensive end from Florida State. He's another guy that decided to come back. Well, you could have been a first-round pick in this year's draft, too. Number three, Dallas Turner. Edge rusher from Alabama. He's only about 240 pounds, but he's explosive. Kind of reminds you of Nolan Smith a little bit, but they probably want to add a little bit more weight on him. Number four, Michael Hall Jr., another Ohio State guy, defensive tackle at the number four spot. And number five, Kamari Lassiter, cornerback from Georgia at the number five spot. So those are the top five as of right now on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I do the beat. This guy can just win together so he can stay on the field longer. He's a disruptor, he's a tackle.
Yep, he's a little
No, I got nothing for that.
I'm just making sure that I gotta keep checking in with him, Rob, because feels like Blar Talk is trying to cut him off, man. So I'm making sure he's still engaged, man. I'm trying to do everything to make sure nothing happens to Gary, man. Because
you haven't put up the I Hate LA sign yet.
It's hard to do right now.
Oh, no, it's not.
We're gonna get to that in a quick second. Uh oh. He's got it ready and willing. So as we give the assist to Gary, so. I guess who has the weakest schedule, toughest, and the weakest schedule in the NFC East? This is for you, Gary.
Well, the toughest schedule will be the Eagles. They've got to play five first-place teams. They're at number one, in the number one spot in the NFL. The Cowboys are at number four, tied with the Giants. They've got to play four first-place teams, and the Redskins are, I think, number eight on the schedule. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the Commanders are
I know.
Are at the number eight spot. So all of them have – I'm sorry, the Commanders. All of them have tough schedules. If you look at the winning percentage, the Eagles' winning percentage at their opponents – it's 566. The Cowboys and the Giants are at 549 total winning percentage. And the Commanders are at 542. So they all have really tough schedules. And they're in the toughest division in football.
Yeah, and one of the main reasons they have the toughest schedules, too, is that they all are playing the AFC East. So they all are playing the Bills, they all are playing the Jets, they all are playing the Patriots, they all are playing the Dolphins. And, you know, you can make a case for all four of those teams having a shot at going to the playoffs next year out of the AFC. So when you look at I never count Belichick out.
And I'll bet you on that one right here, right now.
I'm not betting.
Oh, my God.
So, but then when you look at the Eagles also got to play the 49ers and the Vikings, the two division winners. They also got the Bucks were a division winner too, but the Bucks I think going to be in last place in the NFC South. So I'm not even talking about them. But the Vikings and the 49ers, the Vikings still got a chance to contend for that NFC North along with the Lions and maybe the Packers, outside chance the Packers are sticking in there. So, yeah, the Eagles definitely on paper right now. Definitely look like they have the toughest schedule, with the Giants being next and the Cowboys being third in that division. And the Commanders. You know, it's interesting. You know, Gary called them the Redskins a little while ago. I was actually reading an article today. I have to see if I can go back and find that. But in the article, they kept saying the Washington Redskins. I'm like, did anybody not proofread this for these people?
No, they did. They just didn't give two you-know-what.
Yes.
That was 100%
not the, old font. There was a thing, too, that there was also a story, Rob, that the I was going to say Redskins. The Commanders actually made a call to Andrew Luck to see if he still wanted to play quarterback. Hey, man, come on, man. You know you want to play quarterback. And he kind of shut them down. That's how desperate they were trying to figure out.
So they called Kansas City about Patrick Mahomes. I said, come on, Washington.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Come on, man.
Thank you for that. They called for Patrick Mahomes?
Yes. I just stopped reading. I said, okay, that's I know you guys do due diligence, but come on, Washington. But see what you're saying, though. It makes sense, though. You got three of those teams. You say they got the hardest in there. They may all make the playoffs. The Eagles went to the Super Bowl. They're the division winner. They should have a tough schedule. Cowboys and Giants both in this playoff game should have a harder schedule because they're playing generally the second and the third place teams in other divisions, depending on the NFC for sure. I did like to say that playoffs are playing the AFC East. So the numbers are going to break itself out like that unless you get the NFC South and the AFC South in the same year. You know, no shade. But if you got 6 and 8, those are probably at 7 and 8, probably, right? So in terms of overall strength. So, the NFC, though, is still there to be won. I think all three of those teams probably make the playoffs again.
That's what I'll say about that. Hey, I got to find an article, too. They actually called Patrick Mahomes, man. That's nuts. Hey, Rob, I'll let you do this real quick thing about who's going to be – like what quarterback's going to actually sneak their way into the round one of the 24 NFL draft. And this is interesting, right, because we haven't even had the year play out yet, man. So there's some – I'm kind of curious as far as these predictions here.
Yeah, if you look at the last several drafts, there's always a quarterback that sneaks in there into the first round that was not a first rounder going into the season. You know, that goes back to Joe Burrow. You know, he was projected to be a fifth-round draft pick going into that season, and he just exploded and became the number one pick in the draft. You look at this past year, even though he didn't have a huge successful college season, but, you know, the kid from Florida, Richardson, going number four overall. We knew about his ability.
Oh, wow.
Did we know he was going to be drafted into the first round. So every year we've seen that. So these are just a list of quarterbacks that have the potential, if everything breaks their way, to possibly move into the first round. And I may sound like a homer here, but I'm going to start with Jaden Daniels at LSU as being a guy that can possibly
homer.
Break into that. Obviously led LSU to the SEC West Championship, had a huge game in the bowl game this past year. Had a great game against Alabama. He's actually bulked up a little bit this offseason, added a little bit more muscle to his frame. I mean, you look at last year, he had over 3,000 yards passing, 17 touchdown passes, and only two INTs. And he also ran for a lot of touchdowns as well. And another guy who also looked – and plus, Jay Daniels was very impressive in his frame for LSU as well. Joe Milton, Tennessee, another guy who was extremely impressive. In a bowl game against Clemson for Tennessee after Herndon Hooker got hurt, and also he was very impressive in the spring for Tennessee. So watch Joe Milton, the third, and then JQ is going to love this one. JJ McCarthy, Michigan.
Oh my God!
Another guy to watch.
I like that
can possibly sneak into the first round this year if things break out his way. And here's another one JQ is going to like. Spencer Rattler, South Carolina, came on strong.
He
got
just not
happy.
He sucks.
And,
he sucks. He is not going to first round.
He sucks. I agree with that one.
He has a chance. We don't have him in the first, but these are guys that if things break their way could sneak into the first round.
Man, this is chance.
Spencer Rattler, he had a strong finish the last year with South Carolina, finishing top 25. So if things break his way. And then last but not least, Jordan Travis from Florida State, another guy that finished the year strong. Florida State is like the clear-cut favorite in the ACC. So he's a guy that could possibly, things break his way, finish strong. So those are five names to look at. Jaden Daniels, Joe Milton, J.J. McCarthy, Spencer Rattler, and Jordan Travis.
You know Florida State ain't going to be Clemson in the ACC. You know they're going to find a way to blow it. You know it.
Better watch NC State, too.
Yeah, okay. We keep having these conversations about NC State and the ACC, and I keep trying to tell you that's just not happening. They might do it in basketball, but that's not happening in football. It's not going to happen.
It's not happening in basketball either.
Yeah.
Oh, my
like,
God. That's all cute.
They
think we're in 8-4. Hey,
that puts you in third place in ACC. And it don't win that football, though.
Puts them in contention.
Puts them in contention. That's right.
You guys, we're wrapping this up pretty quickly here. I do want to get this topic in because, you know, first and foremost, I'm going to say congratulations to JQ to the Lakers. It's not looking good. But it has to happen, right? The reason why, because Steve Kerr literally hates pick and roll offenses. Like, I don't know why he doesn't run pick and roll to pull Anthony Davis outside the paint. I don't understand this, right? Now, again, Lonnie Walker had his fourth quarter thing. Give him credit. You know, they're making some adjustments. But at the end of the day, whenever he decided to change, it's like he waited seven games to, like, you know, play for Sacramento. Goes off for 50 points. Then what does he do? Goes right back to this crazy offense. I'm like, put the ball in the best pick and roll player. Don't put Steph Curry on off ball. And this is what's happening. We're like, this is the reason why we're getting out. Because, come on, man, you want to take the best player for pick and roll, not even run that offense. And I get it. You give credit for what he's been doing. You know, Mark Jackson's offense was kind of old and whatever. But now in the playoffs, it's a different situation. Run the effing pick and roll, Steve Kerr, before you – I'm sorry. I'm just saying.
There's two things. One, you don't necessarily want to wear him out, because I think you start to see him get worn out, especially in the fourth quarter, because he was on fire for three, and he had a chance to win that game for them late. But I think, one, Lonnie Walker was abusing. They were hunting on the defensive end, and I was slowing him down. I think that's where Steve Kerr was kind of trying to get him a little bit of rest off the ball a little bit. But the same thing can be said about Darvin Ham. Why on God's green earth are you not telling Anthony Davis to put Gary Payton II or Draymond Green on the block every time they go to a small lineup and say, go right to that block every time, and the offense goes to you every time? I was watching that game like, this makes no sense. What is going on? I was sitting there with my homeboy about 6'6". I said, that's like me trying to guard you, and you standing on the three-point line. If you don't take my little ass down to the block and abuse me the same way he should be doing them, what is going on? So we talking about two coaches doing things that I don't understand. But, yeah, you know, to your topic in there, Austin Reeves and I think Lonnie Walker Jr. have won LeBron over because they can get their own shot. And when he needs to take a break on the court, where he's resting out there as a decoy, he needs people that can handle the ball and go get their own shot. Anthony Davis ain't calling for the ball. His soft ass not just floating around on the three-point line doing nothing in the second half. You got Austin Reeves.
Right.
You got Lonnie Walker out there taking the ball, going to the hole, drawing contact, and then letting those guys get some free possessions while they're still on the court. So I think that's where Anthony, you got those two guys going to the rim playing against the jump shooting team, and they're tiring them out. They are hunting Curry. If you watch it, whoever he's on the defensive end, hunting him and putting him in the mid-range and punishing him.
But I get that. But that's the thing. So we know that it's coming, right? You know that we're gonna double and we're gonna do everything kind of. But like I said, at least the ball's in his hands. He can definitely take some attention in this. Now, granted, Jordan Poole didn't play good, but there's an option whenever I have a pick and roll with Green or with Jermichael Green or with I have an option. You know, Clay hadn't played that good. He's been up and down. And then, you know, whenever you put Peyton in, you had interesting, like, strategy. But, you know, I'm thinking in my head, like, come on, Kerr, man, at least. You know, I know there's some guys that are young, and we know we're getting near the end because these guys are getting old, right? But there's a way to incorporate this offense and still run that from Curry, and you know that what's going to happen. So I'm just not happy. Like I said, you kind of questioning some things, too, because, you know, it took one of Curry's, you know, greatest games.
But the problem with some of the strategy that I saw from, you know, neither one of those teams are my team, but you've got to love basketball and all of this, and I thought it was going to be the Golden State running and gunning. But the Lakers have got them in this half-court thing. They're not pushing the ball up at all. They're walking the ball up or trotting the ball up. They still can't. And they've got enough young people to insert in there that are good shooters. And when they were good, when they were doing it, even in this series, the game that they won, they were pushing the ball up, they were running it, they were kicking it out to their shooters, and the guys were drilling open shots.
Yeah.
They won big. They go to this half-court thing, and the Lakers are one of the best, if not the best, half-court defense in the league. So why as a coach, I think this is where Kerr has failed. Why as a coach would you keep them at that tempo? Every time I had them in a huddle, I would say, let's run play X, Y, and Z, whatever that is, and let's push it up the court. Let's push it up the court every time. And they don't. They let those guys set up, and then they're running, and they're taking shots at the end of that shot clock. And when the Golden State is good and they're running in a flow, they're 10 seconds into the shot clock, and they're already shooting the shot or getting a layup. They're running into 18, 19, 20 seconds and forcing something up. That's what I see as the difference between this series, is not pushing it up and going to the Lakers' strength, which is their half-court defense.
They can roll. The Lakers' defense has been, you got to give credit, outside of game two, their defense has been outstanding. And the key is, I think what you're seeing here from the Lakers, that they've taken Klay Thompson out of his game. They've taken Jordan Poole out of his game. And they take Wiggins, is, you know, so-so. I mean, he's 15, 17 points. He's not exploding on the Lakers. But other than game two, I mean, they pretty much shut down Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole. Steph Curry is still getting his. But even Steph Curry, you look at some of these games, he's 10 out of 25 from shooting. And so they're getting out and contesting his shots. I mean, he's coming to paint, and you've seen Anthony Davis and LeBron James swat at shots when they come in the paint. And you haven't seen that when Steph Curry played against other teams. So, I mean, you got to give them a lot of credit. I think the Lakers are winning this series on the defensive end. Another thing I've realized here, I mean, the Lakers have already been the best team in the league since the All-Star break. And I know, they were probably number 11th in the West at the All-Star break, or maybe 12th, and moved all the way up to the 7th seed. And, And obviously, I mean, this series is not over by any stretch of the imagination. I never count out Golden State, never count out Steph Curry. Yeah.
They're going to win one more game. It's over.
Yeah, they're going to blitz them. I think more than the game, next game here, but we'll see.
They're going to beat the shit out of the Lakers tomorrow. They're going to beat the Lakers tomorrow.
It's over.
That's going to be an ass whooping. Yeah. No. Because you know what they're saying. He did that to us. We get this game in Golden State. We get the 3-2. That pressure comes all the way back to L.A. in game six, because what you can't have in L.A. is have them win that game six in L.A. Then now you let them win two in a row, tied up, and then you got to go back to Golden State and play game seven. So Lakers still got one more pressure packed game. I picked them to win a six. I don't think they can go close them out in Golden State. I would love it. I'd be shocked to shit, though. I really think if I put money on it, I put money on Golden State to cover it, over it, and all of it. LA's got to come out and take a second.
I'll take that.
Yeah, they
can
take that. It's going to be a good game tomorrow night. They're getting ready.
You ain't betting either.
I bet you're drinking something when I see you. For sure.
All right, we'll do that.
He said, I'll
it's an expensive
that.
Glass of wine, I love.
Hey, I'll take one of $20 glasses of wine. You know how your bougie ass is, Gary.
I think that if Golden State can pull this off, I don't think it's going to be, by any stretch of the means, I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think LeBron has showed he's got enough in the tank, and Anthony Davis has shown that he can win games. What is it, on even or the odds?
Playing.
Yeah,
depending on which Anthony Davis you get.
Well, yeah. I think they're going to get a closeout Anthony Davis. And we'll know, I think really early, we'll know how it's going, even if it's close. If we see that Golden State, like I said earlier, is pushing the tempo, pushing it up, and getting into their offensive flow early in the shot clock and stuff, I think that'll be one thing. If they're doing like they did yesterday, LA will be celebrating up there in where do they play? Wherever they play.
San Francisco.
Well, you know, if you look at these first four games of the series, we talked about the Lakers' defense, but it's been about Anthony Davis, too. If Anthony Davis has a good game, the Lakers have won. And the three out of the four games that the Lakers have won, it's because Anthony Davis had a good game. And, you know, the Lakers came out aggressive at the start of the game last night. They kept feeding the ball to Anthony Davis in the paint. I know to Jake Hughes' point, they don't seem to be consistent with it. But they did start the game off yesterday feeding AD the ball in the paint against Draymond Green. So
they went away from that in the second half.
Yeah. And Anthony Davis has got to realize that, hey, you know, for them to win, he's got to be the best player on that team, not LeBron. LeBron's 38 years old now. I mean, can he still have an impact on the game? Absolutely. But he has to be. Anthony Davis has to be the best player on that team. LeBron has to be the second best for them to succeed going forward.
Agreed. Now LeBron has said that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Shout out to my brother-in-law Mike Wood for providing some details into that too. You know, so again on the West Coast, so we'll talk about him next week. He has an interesting situation if the Warriors don't win. He's got some options for the next coach. We'll talk about that next week. If that happens. But I know we're going to get this wrapped up. We got a couple things to talk about. I do want to mention really quickly about the Suns and the Nugget series. It's hilarious about the owner of the Suns, right, and what's happening with Jokic and stuff like that. But another interesting note, crazy. It was a huge flop. But I'm saying it's the fact that, you know, that and because I don't care who the hell he is, that's hilarious. But it is crazy that the Suns are playing better without Chris Paul, right? Booker and Durant are like, you know, because at first you're thinking, man, the Nuggets going to blitz this, but it's like, Chris Paul, what the hell? The Suns are playing better without him. So that's just a little side
note. That's tonight.
We got Cleveland.
Right, right now.
I know. I'm thinking on that, too.
They're down 20.
But it was just like the first couple of games. It's one of those interesting things, too. But 3 minutes to go. I don't know if you guys talk about anything, Danny Crum, anything you want to talk about. We wrap this up because we got to get this show done. So it's on you guys. Go ahead.
I just love the A's going to Vegas and they're going to tear down the Tropicana and put the ballpark right on the strip. Let's go, Vegas.
Damn.
I know, right?
Damn.
I read that.
Damn. Oh,
wow.
That's effed up.
Oakland. Wow. They lost the Raiders to Las Vegas. They lost the Warriors to San Francisco. And now they're getting ready to lose the A's to Las Vegas. Unbelievable.
They gonna put the stadium right on the strip. That's going to be bananas.
Yep. Hey, you know, you hope to get a lot of your local fans to come to the game, but if not, you're gonna get a lot of tourists coming to the game. They gonna fill it up.
I ain't mad at it.
You're gonna definitely fill it up, ladies and gentlemen. You guys recognize the music. That's the end of our show tonight. We won't be having an OT portion tonight. We're gonna end it right here at 12 midnight Eastern time next Tuesday night. We're going to be back at you 11 o'clock Eastern time. Eastern time zone. We want to hear from y'all. All the NBA teams in the East are all on the Eastern time zone. Knicks, Philly, Miami, the Sixers, Boston. So we want to hear from y'all on next Tuesday night. No NBA teams in the playoffs in the Central time zone. So apologize, Chicago, Milwaukee, New Orleans, Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, no NBA teams in the playoffs. Who is that, JQ?
Dallas. You got to. I don't know if you go do it.
All right. Mountain Time Zone, Salt Lake City, Denver. It's going to be 9 Mountain Time. And on the West Coast, Los Angeles, San Francisco, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Fresno, where y'all at? Who y'all cheering for? The Warriors or the Lakers? Fresno, they usually split in Fresno. Half of the city root for the Warriors, the other half root for the Lakers. I want to hear from y'all, Fresno, Jackson, Mississippi, the West Coast. Good night, people.
I ain't got nothing, man. You know he messes me up with that. I'm good, man. The Sixers. What did the Celtics do? I mean, they didn't look good again tonight. The crowd was booing them at one point in that game. They moved to Philadelphia. They're going to have to make some choices on there with Tatum and Brown. We're going to have to see.
Hey, and I personally think Tatum and Brown is a matchup nightmare for teams. I'm pulling for the Sixers, but I'm a little surprised because I thought the Sixers would have trouble with them because the Sixers don't have any athletic wings. I mean, we got Harden and Tyrese Maxey, but they're not elite athletes like Tatum and Brown is. Yeah, yeah.
And it's
and that's
small.
Why I thought they would have problems with Tatum and Brown. Mm-hmm. Yep. But go Sixers.
Nice.
Hey, we
right,
want
gentlemen.
To see Joel Embiid
been
in the finals.
Pleasure. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I am rooting for Golden State, though. Come on, Golden State. Somehow pull this off.
I hate the Warriors
right.
more than anything in the league right now.
My guy, Rob. Let's go.
I love it.
That's hard because I've never been a Lakers fan, but I hate the Warriors more than anybody in the league.
Makes
it fun. Hey, it's all good. Hey man, it's been a privilege sharing the field of battle with everyone. Have a great, great rest of your week, and we'll see you guys same time, same channel next week, gentlemen. Be good.
Good night, gentlemen.
You guys all be safe. You guys all be safe tomorrow at work.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Bye.
See you later.
You two putting up them things in chandeliers.
No shit.
All right, I'm out of here. Bye.
Stop telling my secrets, Rob. Bye.
I am an entrepreneur, so I can take some time, but it's all good. Yeah, be good.
Later.
Ladies and gentlemen.